back to Make It Sound Fiction. It's episode 23, and we are the podcast that every week picks apart pop culture and media that we like. No takebacks. I'm your host, Nico, and I'm joined here every week by my co-host,
Tyler.
And we have a really awesome show for you today. We decided that we were going to just, you know, talk about the kind of the stuff that we've been watching. I know we haven't done an episode like that in a while, and we're also going to answer two reader emails, so I'm pretty hyped about that. But kind of a sad week, I think, for media. Lost somebody in the animation community, which was kind of a big deal. More of a big deal to Tyler than to me, because I'm old.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's a little weird, because I guess I never, because I watched, so Steven Hillenburg, the, like, I guess he was the creator and, I guess, just creator of SpongeBob. I don't know what other, like, titles he had, but
He also worked on quite a few other Nickelodeon properties, like, before.
Rocko's Modern Life.
Yeah, which is I was a big fan of.
Which so. It's I guess I first I was like a little interested, because I obviously I'd seen his name at the end of every episode or whatever when I watched SpongeBob when I was younger, but I never, you know, like when you're younger, you don't usually necessarily think about who makes the thing you're watching, right? So I never
kids don't think about labor.
Yeah, so I never really thought about, like, Steven Hillenburg, right? I remember his name, but I don't really know. I never thought about, like, oh, that's a person that I will, you know, that I apparently like his stuff because I like SpongeBob. And so it was sort of interesting to see also the stuff he had done other than that, other than SpongeBob, but also what he did with SpongeBob. I didn't know that, like, obviously if you're a creator, you would probably have, like, you know, obviously the idea of the show and stuff, but, like, somebody released like sketches from him of like the characters, and they looked like very similar to the way the show is now, which I don't know if that's always true with animation stuff. Like, I don't know if it usually gets like changed a lot. Like, I think SpongeBob was called SpongeBoy or something, but like all his stuff was like, it looks just like the style of the show, which is, I don't know if that's always happens, but that was sort of impressive, I guess, maybe, but just because, like, with games and stuff, sometimes you see early ideas and it's just like, yes, the person's the creator, but, you know, it got worked on in a lot of different ways.
It sort of depends, but typically, I think, as far as I know, and I know we have some people that work in animation that listen to the show, so if you want to write in, like, correct us, but for the most part, I think a lot of, like, on these shows, especially if they start off kind of small with, like, you know, like, somebody kind of running the show.
Yeah.
The character designs get developed by the person themselves, you know, so think of like kind of a concept art,
right?
And a lot of what they develop as like the quote unquote house style is kind of what goes on to become like the, you know, canonical character designs with, you know, some tweaking and things like that. And because a lot of what animators do is just take the character designs and then, you know, do the keyframing and and the actual animation, but they have to kind of keep to that style. I mean, that's how Disney's done it.
Right.
That's how
I just didn't know if
everybody
stuff
does
like,
it.
You know, I could imagine him being like, here's a show I want about SpongeBob and here's what he looks like. And then maybe the network and all the other people were like, let's change. Like, because clearly they changed it to SpongeBob. Like, I thought you know, you'd see a little bit more differences, but they look very close. Like, all he had Squidward, like, he had a lot of the cast drawn.
Yeah.
Even Sandy Cheeks and stuff. So, I don't know. I thought that was cool. Because, like, those are really iconic characters now. And just to see them in, like, the early sketches. But, yeah, so I guess it's weird for me to talk about it a little bit because I just didn't pay that much attention to him as a person. So I don't really know a lot about him. I just know a lot about, you know, watching SpongeBob. I didn't watch a lot after season four, which I also didn't know that he didn't work on the show since season four. I knew that he was gone, I think, but I didn't know that it was like season four. Cause I don't know I don't know how many more seasons it has in four. I don't know if it's a lot, but I know that people definitely talked about the show not being as good as when he was running it.
Yeah.
But I guess one of the things, it's weird because you didn't watch SpongeBob, but you said you watched Rocko's Modern Life, right?
Yeah, I watched Rocko's Modern Life.
I don't know
Life.
Much, I don't really know much about that show, but I know one thing, when I was reading, I think Polygon, we'll have to link that, Polygon had a really good story, I thought, of like all the different like writers, like staff's like memories of watching SpongeBob and why they liked it, which helped me understand why I maybe liked it, because I just wasn't very critical of it when I was watching it so long ago. But I've watched it since then. But I think one of the things that I definitely remember liking is that it was surreal because it was like this, you know, you have this like underwater community, this world. But the show also spent a lot of time like acknowledging that that was sort of ridiculous, but not like in a weird and too meta way. But it definitely went lengths to... you know, show that things were, you know, like, it wouldn't be afraid to show that, like, oh, SpongeBob is a talking sponge, and that's kind of weird. And also, like, you know, even some of the, like, I guess hypocrisy of some of the characters and stuff like that. Like, there was always, like, an eye for, like, the viewer in that show. Like, it always felt like it wasn't just, like, yes, yeah, SpongeBob is a cool character and everybody wants to be him. It was, like, we're third person here. And watching this, and I thought that was always interesting compared to other shows that I had watched around then, because I always thought that, like, it made me feel smart, I guess, maybe, because I was like, oh, like, the jokes and stuff are sometimes just, like, either non sequiturs, almost like what, like, I guess Family Guy made popular afterwards, or, like, you know, just, like, gags that are maybe a little bit more adult, but not adult and, like, too, like, not super adult, but just more like, there's like one of them that was really popular, I think it was getting linked on Twitter today or like this week, was the one where they are like trying to break out Miss Puff, which is like the driving school, boating school teacher, and the whole joke is like SpongeBob never like passes his driver's test, but they're trying to break him out of, or break her out of jail, and she gets like really mad and like puffs up because she's a pufferfish, right? So, but she was like in jail for something. She always gets in trouble for when SpongeBob messes up his driving test, basically. So somehow she was in jail, and they were like, and her, SpongeBob and Patrick were breaking her out, and they're like, "You need to get out. Like, you've been in too long. Like, you got to get out to the world. Like, you know, you need to get back out and live again." And then it just cuts to like this fish man guy, that is just like driving his car. Like, he's in the middle of the frame, and like, you, like, it, and I guess he's sort of like trapped by the window of his car, like in traffic. And then it just like cuts again to him in like his desk job, same like frame positioning, and then cuts to him at home, like looking out the window. And I think it's like his wife is like, "Let's go to bed" or whatever. And then it like cuts back to the scene. And that, I remember that when I watched it the first time, and I thought it was funny because I vaguely knew like, oh yeah, they're making a joke because like this fish guy is like living a normal, like, you know, like office job, you know, like life. And that's kind of funny. But then that joke just got more true as I got older. Like, oh yeah, like that is the routine of life. It's not even necessarily that I literally work at a desk job. It's just that the routine of life can also be its own trap. And I was just like, wow, I can't believe like that joke was in the middle of like a funny episode of SpongeBob. And I think that is a good example of the sort of humor that show had. It was like, there was definitely adults working on it that had, like, that definitely had a really good sense of humor, and they did their best to like work that stuff in lightly. And I don't think it's, I guess I don't want to say it's only a good show because it lasts now. I think I liked it as a kid then too, but I think that there's really good writing in it in some spots, because stuff like that is like, I don't know. I thought that was sort of like, even if it's a little bit more ham-fisted, I thought it was sort of deft for maybe a kid's show. I don't know. I thought it was pretty funny.
I think treating kids like they're not stupid is, and also treating kids like they are going to carry some of this sense of humor with them. I mean, like, I have no doubt in my mind that, like, so many of the cartoons from the early 90s have 100% informed the senses of humor of every single millennial out there.
Yeah.
Just, you know, slightly odd, extremely, you know, got kind of a cynical bend to them, sarcastic but not completely bleak, you know, but like,
and there's still meta stuff, like meta, like a lot of meta humor, I feel like, It was in a lot of those shows too, and that's
winking
popular
to the
too.
Audience a little bit. Like that sensibility was definitely in the cartoons that I grew up on, which were slightly ahead of SpongeBob, which was like Ren and Stimpy, Rocko's Modern Life.
I feel like
Animaniacs.
SpongeBob just wouldn't have existed without those types of shows either, because I think people wouldn't
They came from that lineage. Yeah. It was funny because SpongeBob was real big when I was in college.
Right.
And I definitely and I had friends that would watch it. I never really did because despite the fact that I was like a college kid and it was like perfect college kid viewing because, you know, you could drink and get high during the day and watch cartoons and that was like an acceptable thing. I never really kind of got into it because it was a little bit too cutesy for my taste, but I definitely have memories of like friends watching SpongeBob all day, you know, in between classes or whatever. But I was, you know, like, I feel like Nickelodeon had like a really great history of slightly more mature cartoons than maybe for kids. But
it's weird going back to, there are sometimes like threads or whatever, or tweets of people picking out moments like the car, or like the jail one I was talking about, and it's weird. It's like, wait, I saw that episode when I was young. I didn't know that was the joke, or like I never read it that way. Wow, okay, I'm surprised that was on Nickelodeon.
Oh no, there was actually something in Rocko's Modern Life that got changed.
I think I've heard of something being changed.
The Chokey's Chicken chain,
maybe.
Those changed. I didn't catch that one when I first watched it as a kid.
I think there might have been something in SpongeBob that got cut, I think, and it was in like a DVD version that probably wouldn't be on like television. Mm-hmm.
They got away with a lot more than I think that they would now. I mean, like, let's be honest, when I was a little kid, like a little kid, there was always shows that were kind of like empty and just meant to sell toys, like She-Ra was definitely, you know, Transformers.
I was gonna say Transformers, I know people were gonna get mad about that.
Thundercats, that sort of thing. They were mostly meant to vehicles to sell toys. The animation was cheap. And so I felt like we kind of got lucky with like kind of the animation renaissance that happened with like Warner Brothers and Nickelodeon, basically. Right. Like there was just such a huge amount of really creative kids shows that didn't treat kids like idiots, and I think that we have that starting kind of again now with like Steven Universe. Steven Universe and things of that nature.
Steven Universe would have been a really cool show to watch as a young
kid.
Like, I know I wouldn't have understood like the deeper stuff, but I think it would have been really exciting because it's such a imaginative world. Like, I mean, so is SpongeBob and all, I guess, other shows, but so I don't know, it's like super fantastical and I probably really like it. I don't know, I could just imagine kid me liking it a lot.
Same. Like I it would have been nice to watch a cartoon feature like big gay ladies as a kid. I mean, like, let's be real, cartoons definitely did turn me gay as a kid, but not quite in the same overt way as Steven Universe, for sure. Like, you know, I had a crush on Batman the Animated Series, Catwoman, and, you know, She-Ra, and, you know, Chitara from Thundercats, but it was not quite the same.
I think I had a crush on Chitara.
Get in line, buddy.
Okay.
I witnessed her for Halloween one year.
Okay.
Like, like with, you know, my little like, you know, drugstore costume. But I think it's really interesting that like SpongeBob has always sort of persisted in pop culture in one form or the next.
That was something that was in that Polygon thing. Someone was like, I don't know if I agree with it, but someone in there wrote like SpongeBob was like the first meme, and regardless of whether that's like factual or not, like I don't know if it was like supposed to be about being a meme early on. I guess maybe the definition has changed, but I think that it is funny how that show was able to support being a meme in a lot of cases recently and still be funny. Like, it's still like, people didn't hate. Like, I think there's definitely people who think SpongeBob is like cringy or like stupid or whatever, and obviously that can happen, and maybe there are like later episodes that are bad, but it seems like they also, people like it but also think that there are funny things you can make a meme out of like at the same time, which maybe is a little bit more rare for some stuff that is ends up being memes, popular memes.
Mm-hmm. I mean like, here's the thing, is it's a funny show, so moment to moment is going to have things that are funny.
Yeah.
And I think that that's makes it very easy memeable material, because you can kind of take a reaction or a joke that sort of plays out visually and then sort of paste your own sort of reactions to it. A lot of meme culture is definitely like taking a sort of singular moment as a joke and then sort of everybody sort of like doing freeform,
yeah, like applying it to it. Other things via the like,
yeah, and sort of repeating the joke but in with their
the lens of that joke.
Yeah exactly. And that's what kind of makes
and
it,
I think it helps
know,
the SpongeBob because a lot of people have seen it, so it's like I instantly understand this
reference.
Joke yeah,
people have that reference. It's very heavily referenced, it's very well known to a certain particular part of the generation, that sort of thing. So yeah, no, it absolutely helps versus like, you know, like I know that there's things that go around that, you know, become popular on the internet regardless of where it's from, like definitely like, you know, stuff from, you know, RuPaul's drag race and stuff like that. I don't watch that show, but you know, like there's, it is so embedded in kind of the popular culture of like American people of a certain age range, more so than a lot of other things that people like when you're a kid or you're a certain age, your popular culture is so much smaller for you.
Yeah.
Than when you get to be an adult, and popular culture was so much smaller back then because the internet hadn't
Yeah, I guess
gotten
you just didn't have
streaming
access
yet.
To a bunch of stuff.
So you just
so
didn't have
just,
access. So everybody watched SpongeBob. Everybody watched this thing.
Yeah.
You didn't have access to like 80,000 kajillion shows and YouTubers and Twitch streamers,
right.
And
yeah,
because
you know it's,
and
it's interesting because I remember watching SpongeBob a lot just because I would get home and like I would look at the, because I had like Dish TV or whatever, and I would look at the guide, and on Nickelodeon it would just be like 17 blocks of SpongeBob after school. And I would just be like, well, I guess I'll just turn this on. Like, it's not even that I like actively want to watch SpongeBob. It's just like, well, I like SpongeBob, so I guess I'll just watch all 17 of these things. You know, like, it's just like that was the only thing that was on. Like, I mean, that I cared about as a kid. So it was just like, I'm going to watch SpongeBob, I guess. Like, there's no internet. Like, I didn't have internet then. So I just didn't like, I wasn't like looking at stuff. So I was just like, I'm just going to watch this show. So, yeah. And I think there was, one day I'll have to make you watch it, but there was a really good episode that I think a couple people have mentioned in like remembering SpongeBob episodes, the Rock Bottom episode. I think it's called Rock Bottom. Didn't we talk about the BoJack Horseman episode, the underwater one?
A little bit, yeah.
Because I think like that show, that episode is definitely somewhat of a reference to the SpongeBob one. It has to be, because the SpongeBob one is totally just that same setup where it's like, SpongeBob takes a bus somewhere and gets dropped off in the wrong place, and he
and the BoJack episode is even underwater.
Yeah, and it's under. That's why I was like, when I first started watching, I was like, "Hold on, this is underwater," and he's talking to people. Because the big thing about the Rock Bottom episode is that SpongeBob wants to get home, but doesn't have any money or whatever. I forget if he doesn't have any money, but he wants to just catch a bus, and he's waiting at this bus stop. And he's like asking people like when the bus comes, and they all don't speak his language. Like he does talk on like BoJack, because he can't hear BoJack, right? But he talks a lot, but he just doesn't. He can't. It just feels like a nightmare. It feels like you can never get to your destination. You can never get that bus to come. There's even like a GIF that was going around that was like he was getting hungry, and he went across the street from the bus stop to go get like something to eat. And every single time he puts his hand in the vending machine to get the food, the bus like starts to like a bus shows up, and it just like, and it does like a gag where like he moves his hand in and out, and the bus backs up and goes forward. And it's funny, but it's also like, you know, like, you've had those dreams where you just can't get to the thing, you can't run away fast enough. And so, like, I think that scene ends with him, like, grabbing the thing really quickly, and the bus just leaves, and he's just there alone again. And it's just, like, a really lonely episode, and it does this thing where it's just, I think for me, when I was watching it, I thought it was so, it was interesting, but also, you know, weird, I guess, for me at the time, that I was just like, it's weird that, like, nobody speaks the same language as SpongeBob, so you can't even tell what they're saying. And it's, like, kind of frustrating, but also, like, I don't know, it's interesting, because, you know, that's a thing. And I thought that that was just, like, a really good episode, because it showed just, like, what you could do with storytelling without having a bunch of conversations and still have, like, you know, one compelling sort of conflict. And that was definitely the and that BoJack Horseman episode, like, didn't, I think it got nominated for some award. Like, people yeah. really liked that episode. And I think that episode has, like, you know, maybe, like, a better soundtrack, and definitely has, like, no dialogue. So that's interesting. But what has dialogue?
No dialogue. But, and also yeah. the fact that BoJack Horseman is a sadder sort of show.
Yeah, it's a sadder show, and it makes sense. But I think there's something about the Rock Bottom episode that is sad in its own way. Like, it's weirdly sad for SpongeBob. It's a really interesting episode, because it's just, like, it feels like a bottle episode. Like, he just doesn't go anywhere. The episode is still, like, is on the street for the most part, and it just feels alien. It just feels all, like, you just feel so alone, and it's almost, like, unsettling, but it's just an interesting episode. It's called Rock Bottom. I think SpongeBob is on Amazon, like, mm-hmm. Prime streaming, so I think it's on there. I think it's one of the first four seasons, I'm pretty sure. I don't think it was later than that. But it's a really interesting, I thought it was a good episode. And they're all the episodes in SpongeBob are just short, because it's a cartoon show, so.
Yeah, I just think it's, like, I think kids' entertainment is really good when it sort of prepares you for the entertainment you're going to be liking as an adult.
Yeah, like, that BoJack episode was really just, like, a lot for me, because I was like, this is just bringing back so many memories of being confused about that SpongeBob episode.
But then sort of adding that layer to it of, now you're older.
Yeah, and it started to make sense for both of them. Like, I understood the BoJack one a lot, but I also was going back and going, like, oh, I totally understand the SpongeBob one now.
Yeah, and isn't that wild?
Yeah, but that was really cool, yeah.
On another level, you also realize, like, clearly people that are doing the BoJack Horseman show clearly watched that episode.
Yeah, and also that, like,
And sort of brought it into that sensibility for a new show.
Yeah, it was weird, because it just hit this feeling that just felt specific. It was like, you know, it was like the smell of something that reminds you of something. It was just this is that episode. And this is, like, revealing things I just didn't understand about that episode, because it was so confusing to me at the time. And it also just was, like, doing stuff where it was like, oh, the people who made SpongeBob, like, they definitely had a vision for that episode. Like, that's one of the episodes that definitely just, like, somebody must have had a really clear idea of what they wanted to do there. And you see it in BoJack in its own way, but you also see that, like, back then somebody also had that idea, you know, similar idea. And it's just cool to see, I don't know, like, to be like, oh, this old show I used to watch also had a really interesting idea too. Like, it wasn't just a weird episode that didn't actually make much sense and was kind of bad. It was like really interesting. I don't know. That episode is just really good. And the BoJack one is good too. So I don't know. It makes me appreciate them both at the same time.
Yeah. I think that, I guess, kind of in the light of the other kind of big news that we had in sort of, like, pop culture this week, which was that Evangelion is being brought to Netflix and Cowboy Bebop is getting a live action show.
Yeah, which they did a live action SpongeBob movie, which I never saw.
I am kind of one of those assholes that's like, sure, do your shitty little live action show, but it's never going to be as good as the original, because I think animation is one of those art forms.
I don't even
that.
Yeah.
Oh God! Like,
we
it's
didn't even
sort
finish.
Of,
I didn't even finish that show, and it doesn't seem like
there's so many things you can do with animation. So many different ways of visually telling a story that you're never going to be able to recreate live action. You're just not going to. Animation is drawings. It's its own sort of unique thing. I think, want people to stop doing this.
Yeah, switching the format to live action is weird. Has it ever been like good? I don't know a lot of live action things from animation that were okay, at least. Like, because all I remember, like, immediately I think of the Airbender, whatever it's called.
Avatar. Yeah.
Wasn't that horrible?
Mm-hmm.
And like also well
and also super racist too.
Yeah, right. What about like it's not animation, but did people like, I don't remember because it was so old, but did people like the live action Ninja Turtle movie?
It was weird.
It was just weird. Okay, because I knew it both was weird, sets of but them I don't were know if weird. It was good. I know that's a
there's
comic.
There's just so
but
many things that yeah. don't look good as practical effects or CGI that look good as animation because animation yeah. is drawings. Like,
and I don't think that it's impossible to, you know, like the Marvel movies are based off of comics and they end up being okay, right?
So different though. That's so different. Like, I mean, like there's also things you can't do in movies that you can do in comics as well because they are also drawings. But it's when you see something animated and moving, seeing it in real life and moving is just so much more dramatically. Like, I feel like you can get away with abstracting some things from comics in real life movies, although it's pretty hit or miss with like real action movies, like, you know, Marvel movies. But it's noticeable when you go from animation to
yeah. That I guess that jump has never made sense to me, and if there really hasn't been a really good one, then it doesn't seem like it would really work. I think there's a lot of like I feel like there's stuff in animation that you can shorthand in a way that just doesn't really work visually with live action. That
you can do so much with action sequences,
yeah,
that you really can't.
And you can, because you just get full control over the framing of everything and the way everything just moves. Like,
plus it's its own visual language too.
Yeah,
like it really just is. And Cowboy Bebop of all things. Is one of those things that had such a particular look and such a particular style and such a particular way of shooting things and the way things were framed by stuff. And like, I don't know how they're going to make that as a live action show that's going to come close at all to the animated series, but it's very clear to me right now that, like, with the fact that they're doing a live-action Battle Angel Alita film, with the fact that they did a Ghost in the Shell film, all of these things were, like, these big anime series that had such critical acclaim and had such a unique, interesting visual style, and then they all look kind of crappy.
Yeah.
As real life, as, like, live-action.
I just forgot that they... didn't they make a Dragon Ball live-action movie?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, or they're attempting to. They were also attempting to do an Akira one, and that's a whole other... That's a whole other, like... Behind the whole problem of, like, live-action never looking as good as the animated versions, you also have the problems with Battle Angel Alita, Ghost in the Shell,
oh, yeah, Ghost
Cowboy
in the Shell.
Bebop, and Akira in particular all have certain subtleties and nuances to them that are Japanese creators talking about things that are specific to Japanese culture, or in the case of Cowboy Bebop, Japanese culture reinterpreting American culture. In a way that when it's completely done by, like, American directors and screenwriters and they have white actors instead of Japanese actors and stuff like that, it's so appalling. It's so appalling because...
That's like, interesting because I've been watching, like, a Silent Hill playthrough, and that is uh-huh. interesting because that is, like, a Japanese developer making, like, a Western, like, story. And
yeah.
That there's Silent Hill movies, and I've seen the first one, and I don't remember. Like, I wonder if that was weird too, because I think that was mostly just like all American stuff. Like, so I wonder if that had a similar effect of like, that doesn't really work for what that game was even trying to do, and that's just a game. But like,
yeah,
I could see that being an issue all the time with a lot of that stuff. It's just like, you can't just turn it into like, it's because it's Netflix doing it, right? For Cowboy Bebop,
I don't know, because Netflix Originals covers a variety of, like, Netflix is producing this in the case of House of Cards. Netflix bought the rights to it, which is the case of thing. Like, there's a lot of Netflix originals that are just like they bought the U.S. licensing for it. There's Netflix gave the production company money to make this, but they don't have any editorial oversight on it. Like, there's a lot of things that fall under that header, so we'll see.
Yeah,
but I kind of like. It's interesting to kind of go back to the original point I was trying to make before I got sidetracked is just that animated features and animation in general is so important, I think, to the culture, but also that like so many of us have memories of animated shows across our ages that, you know, aren't just when we were kids, and it's kind of really interesting to see that impact. And I think it's interesting because there's definitely cultures like Japan that recognize that a lot more as being something that's lifelong, like a lifelong interest, versus it's just for kids here in America.
It'd be cool because, like, imagine the other side of this where they just redid it, like, maybe just, like, I don't know if there's been, like, I assume there's no like HD versions of Cowboy Bebop or anything. Maybe, I don't know.
Like there should be because it was released on like remastered and released.
Like imagine if they made a big deal about that and did like trailers and stuff and just like made it a big deal on Netflix or something. Like maybe people would just watch the original show and it would help get rid of that idea that like animation is just for kids. Like I don't know.
Well, that's what Evangelion I think is going to do. That's
you think
be
that's
wild
exactly
because...
what I thought they were. I knew that they made a big deal about it, but I was wondering if it was just going to be one of those things where it's like, oh, it's just on Netflix now, like not actually
well,
like
that's
a big
the thing,
thing.
Is that Gainax hasn't let anybody put it on any streaming service.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
That's
okay,
why this
yeah,
is such
so that
a
is a
big
deal.
Deal.
It is just on a thing. Yeah, okay.
So you have not been able to get a hold of or watch Evangelion since. It was just on live television, I think, on Cartoon Network for a while, and or a very expensive box set of like DVDs or Blu-rays or whatever, which is how a lot of people do not watch things anymore because it's expensive and streaming services are so prolific. So the fact that it hasn't been on Netflix or Hulu or Crunchyroll or anything means that there is a whole generation of people who were not around or not even born yet when it first came on TV in Japan or United States that have just never seen Evangelion.
Yeah, I've never, I don't even know
and
what
have
about.
No idea. I have no idea.
I have no idea. All I know is like Asuka or whatever. I know what she looks like, but that's about, and there's robots. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know, teens in giant robots fight.
So, darling, and
vicious
the
aliens. God, Darling in the Franxx would not be here.
I know.
So many things wouldn't be here without Evangelion, and that's why it's such a big deal, is it's such a cultural moment.
What
but
about,
it's interesting because
wait, what?
Because it was such a big deal in Japan.
Did
but the thing
is
it was one of the
also that? Like is it also
yes.
like is Gundam like just it's after?
No, Gundam came The Gundam series that people my age were really into came before Evangelion.
Okay, before. Okay, that's interesting. Because I didn't know if like Evangelion was like one of the first and then a lot of the mech stuff was after.
Oh, no, no, no. No, no,
okay,
no, no.
So
that, mech
is just,
stuff...
that is just a good one, but after a lot.
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah, it's... Okay. So I feel bad because I'm basically going to be retreading something Austin Walker said on Waypoint Radio.
Oh, I didn't even get to that part yet in that podcast.
Yeah,
so
so very, 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 very condensed version of what he said is that back in the 60s and 70s, giant robot shows were pretty much like superhero shows where the giant robots could just do kind of crazy stuff. And it was, you know, to sell a lot of toys, and it was, you know, kind of this big deal, and that over time they sort of became more of the Gundam style show of giant robots, which is that the giant robots were war machines, and a lot of the stories were sort of based around the idea of the toll and cost of war, especially with like child soldiers and stuff like that, and that's kind of the two strains of giant robots that kind of happened in Japanese animation, but by the 90s, you got kind of that latest round of, like, Gundam. And the Gundam series that a lot of people my age saw was very much about, like, the, like, you know, the tolls of war, things like that. Evangelion came right at the end of the 90s. Like, after that last sort of, like, round of Gundam series came out. And what it did, according to Austin, is sort of marry the, like, super-powered robot sort of premise married with the tolls of war and just sort of smushed them together. And did so much more with kind of the aesthetic of the robots, the kind of the underlying thematic elements of this, and was also being created by the show creator, Hideki Anno, I think is his name. I always forget his first name. He was basically given carte blanche to make the show that he wanted to make, after not finishing a lot of projects prior to Evangelion. And it's very clearly a show that is one man sort of working through a lifetime of depression and regrets and pain and self-hatred and anguish. And I think people who grew up watching it and it being one of the first long-form anime series that people started to encounter as, like, teenagers, you know, because a lot of people my age started with, like, Dragon Ball Z, Sailor Moon, but then we started getting more, like, long-form series that were, like, Evangelion, Cowboy Bebop, Outlaw Star, things that kind of had these, like, really dark thematic elements to them. Evangelion, I think, blew a lot of people's minds as, like, young teens and young adults and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because it's really fucked up and it's really messed up and it really wasn't for kids. It really, really wasn't a show for kids, or even teens. But you kind of understood as a teenager, there was a lot about it as a teenager that you would find really compelling and really relatable, because everybody in that show is, like, the main characters of that show are really depressed teenagers. So you can kind of understand why a lot of teenagers would just be like, whoa, my mind's blown. Like, you know, like that sort of thing. So I think that's why it had such an impact. But the fact that, like, you just couldn't watch it for the longest time is why it coming to Netflix is such a big deal. Because now we're going to have a whole new generation of people that are going to be like, what the fuck is this show about? And it's going to be interesting to see that, you know, I don't know. I haven't seen it since college. I haven't been able to see it. So I kind of wonder, like, I think it's going to be like Cowboy Bebop in that I'm going to rewatch it and just remember how much I liked it.
Yeah. But also be I'm going to stay free of any, like, random, because I don't know anything about it. And I kind of want to just watch it without knowing anything about it.
That would be really cool. I you know, if I honestly think that it would be really interesting if we did, like, a little, like, you know, when it does come out, if we did, like, a weekly recap or something like that, like a little, like, rewatch or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because I just, all I know is that people like it and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Oh, I think you're going to, I'm actually super interested to see what you think of it in particular, because of certain characters in the show I think might be interesting for you.
I know somebody told me that, like, because isn't D.Va very inspired?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, aesthetically, yeah. Not personality-wise in the slightest.
Not personality-wise,
yeah.
At all? Okay, I didn't know. Yeah, I mean, I know she's a gamer, yeah. But I didn't know if, like, any of the stuff of, like, you know, like, her story was also
no.
Okay.
No. Well, yes and no. The, like, now that we've actually gotten her short is actually a lot closer to some of the thematic stuff of Evangelion, although Overwatch writers are not going to even come within a fraction.
I just didn't know if it was, like, broad strokes of somebody in Evangelion. I didn't know.
But
you've
got those little, like, elements of, like, it's damaging and taking a toll on her mentally and physically.
Yeah.
To do these things. Yeah. So in that way, it's definitely inspired by Evangelion. I mean, we've known for a really long time that the people that do the story stuff for Overwatch are very big anime nerds, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't even know what it's about. Like, I don't even know, like, the synop, like, the, like, a paragraph story information. Like, I don't know anything about the show other than it has robots and teenagers.
Robots fighting aliens.
Yeah.
If you go into the show with just that. I didn't even know
they were fighting aliens. You just revealed that for me. I thought they were fighting other mechs.
Oh, no, no, no.
I didn't know there was aliens.
If you go into the show knowing just that, you have so much more to learn.
I'm not spoiling it. I just didn't even know there was aliens. I thought they were just fighting other mechs. Because that's how Gundam was.
Oh, no, no, yeah, I know. It's war on a different scale, for sure.
Yeah, I thought it was, like, just war with other people with mechs, because I've got, the only thing I've ever seen is Gundam Seed, and that was just mechs fighting mechs. Oh,
okay, yeah, so. Yeah.
Interesting, yeah. And when is it coming out? I have a story up, I was just...
Next year, spring. I think.
Spring 2019, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so. I didn't know. So, okay, is it kind of funny then? I wonder if Netflix carries that, like, box set. Probably not. It'd be funny. Like, Netflix technically had it. I don't think they had the rights to that. I just did not know it was one of those shows. Because it's so, people talk about it all the time that I just thought that, like, well, clearly they're watching it somehow. I mean, maybe they had the box set, but, like, I thought it was just on Crunchyroll or something, you know? Like,
oh, no, no, no. You have to, like, either buy the box set or you had to find other ways.
It makes sense now because whenever I say I haven't seen it and then somebody like you are like, oh my gosh, you should watch it maybe. Nobody ever is like, just watch it on Netflix or whatever. Like, nobody ever says like, this thing. Now it makes sense why I haven't seen it because there's not any way to see it unless I'm already into it and have a thing or whatever. That's so weird though, right? Like, is it available in Japan?
Like, I don't know because I don't understand why something popular is so. Because Gainax doesn't want people to have the rights to it. Gainax has been extremely iron-fisted.
But they only wanted it on like television, and basically that's it. Like, that's weird.
Well, no, Blu-ray sales, DVD sales. You know, like, you want to protect your IP, or not like protect your IP, but if you want to be the one-stop shop in town, the only way that somebody can like blast through Evangelion is they buy like an expensive Blu-ray set,
right? But even a lot of companies like that will still release newer versions, like because like it's at the box set that you're talking about is out of print too, which like if somebody's trying to have like to keep their show like only on their own stuff, you would reprint new things usually, like Disney does that. I don't know. That's interesting that they just don't want it out there other than the one set of, like, box sets that they made once.
That would be interesting to be something to look into.
Yeah, because I know that, like, you know, you can't get, like, I don't know if you can stream, like, Snow White or whatever, but, like, they definitely release it on, you know, different versions of Blu-rays all the time. Like, you know, you can find one. They're not out of print necessarily, or maybe they are. You know what I mean? Like, Disney will just re-release stuff all the time. Where it's interesting that this show was just once and they're like, that's it, and it's out of print, and no, we're not doing it again.
Yeah.
That's just, it's just weird. I don't know.
That rarity just takes on like a mythical status. Yeah, that's just so,
it's interesting. I'm not saying it's, I guess it's bad if you want to watch the show, but it's just strange. I don't know. I've never heard of anything being locked down that much. I've definitely heard of a company only releasing it their own way, but they usually keep it relevant, you know? So that's just strange, but yeah.
Well, we do have time, I think, for some reader mail, because we did get two emails from Gus Bremer. So we wanted to actually like answer them versus like forgetting to answer them and running out of time at the end of the episode. So the first email that we got, and by the way, if you want to send reader email to us, you can send it to makeitsoundfiction@gmail.com.
Read them faster than this one.
Yeah.
I mean, we read it. We just didn't talk about it.
Talk about it on the show. Hi, Nico and Tyler. I love the show and the discussions you two have about varied subjects. After the episode on terrible television men, I was curious if you've watched The Punisher. As far as terrible men go, a guy with a lot of guns who wages open warfare on anyone he thinks justified is already pretty bad. But then there's also the way he's received by actual law enforcement. A lot of cops have embraced him as something of a role model, which is a pretty scary prospect. Is it possible to make something good of The Punisher, or is it a better idea to quietly retire him because of the whole police thing? Cheers, Gus.
So you've seen The Punisher. I've only seen him when he showed up in Daredevil season 2.
Yeah, that's where he started.
I like that actor, but I don't know. I watched the old Punisher movie too. Like, I forget when that came out, but like, I just don't really think the Punisher is that exciting of a character. And I didn't think he was that compelling in the little I saw of him in Daredevil. So when that show came out, I just wasn't that interested in watching it. You've seen it, so I haven't.
Yeah. I think it's kind of the pinnacle of like amoral TV men, where he's a former soldier and he is just going to like do what he wants to do and get revenge and like keep tons of guns. And the Punisher TV show itself, by the end of it, he was just bloody and just unemotional. And it was just like really kind of gross. And so the fact that like real life cops think that he's like super cool because he like wages open warfare on people, and it's like the epitome of like white dude.
Yeah, he just seems privileged. So the show didn't make that interesting at all.
Not really.
Weird. And did they cancel? Is that one of the ones that's canceled?
It never got a second season.
Okay. Yeah. I thought that was weird that they made a show out of it. I mean, I understand because like that actor could definitely have his own show, right? Probably. Like, he's pretty good, but I don't know. Like, I was just so uninterested in him as I understand that the Punisher, I mean, I assume he's pretty popular in the comics. Like, he shows up a lot. I mean, they made a movie about him. It seems like but even the movie was even the game too was very much like, do horrible things to people with blood. And that just feels really dated now to me. Like, are we really in 2018 making, or 20? What?
Oh my God.
What?
Punisher isn't canceled.
Yeah, I was
Jessica
wondering.
Jessica Jones and The Punisher are the only two Marvel shows left.
I mean, maybe it's about to be canceled. Who knows? But
I mean, it's probably going to be canceled.
But I was
canceled.
The Punisher got canceled. It isn't canceled, and Daredevil is?
Oh, no. Punisher got a season 2 order. What?
I wonder if that stuff was in works before they started canceling. Like, I still wonder if like season 3 or whatever of Jessica, is it 4? Season 3, 4? Jessica Jones is going to happen, and then it's going to get canceled. I feel like the cancellations are definitely a mix of like production stuff and stuff already like contracts already signed. I feel like that stuff is all going away soon.
Yeah.
But who knows? But anyway, you didn't say much about The Punisher when you watched it. I knew when you were watching it, but you just didn't say anything. And I assume that was because it wasn't very good.
Mostly because, it really wasn't.
Like, it seemed like whatever to you. Like, you watch a lot of stuff that you don't talk about, but it seemed like even that was just like, it just seemed like you watched it and then moved on.
I'm actually trying to remember what even happened in Punisher.
Like, what
season
is the,
one.
Even the arc of that? Because, like, he isn't. I mean, I guess he's shown to be sort of sympathetic in Daredevil, but I still don't understand why he had his own show.
It looks like he kind of goes on the hunt for the like gang members that killed his family.
Oh, okay.
And he sort of like runs into people who are digging up his like military past, because now there's like FBI agents that are like looking into his past, and I'm reading plot synopsis right now.
I mean, you don't even remember watching it and thinking, because like part of Gus's question was like off of that episode we talked about where it's like we need to stop making shows about, you know, men that are just like bad that are main characters or whatever. I mean, did you get that? Were you sort of like, I don't know, not disgusted, I guess, but just like, do you remember anything about that show being like, God, why does this even exist? Like, why are we having a show about this dude? Versus something like Daredevil, where Daredevil isn't necessarily great either, but...
Frank Castle is not an interesting man.
Yeah.
He's a pretty much boilerplate American character of he's a white guy with a military background who is extremely stoic. He doesn't have any emotionality. He's not sympathetic. The only sympathetic parts about him are that he lost his family.
Which is so tropey.
That's so typical. Yeah, that's so tropey and so typical. It means that there's nothing in the way to stop him from just like blowing people to bits. And I'm just bored.
It's so weird that this happened like 2 years ago, last year, whatever year it was. Like... Okay. I just don't understand why this show exists even at all. Like, and then it has a season two. I don't know. I kind of forgot about The Punisher, and I didn't even watch it. And I don't... Weird. I don't know. It sounds like it was just not a great... It sounds like it was so whatever that you didn't even want to spend the time on talking about it as a, you know, a show about another man that nobody cares about, or, like, that shouldn't care about, we shouldn't care about. I don't know. That's weird. It's funny that you can't remember any of it.
I really can't.
Yeah. Which maybe says everything.
Yeah. Like, I think by the end of the first season, he joins a support group, which is good, I guess. But like,
I mean, you remember more about Breaking Bad than The Punisher.
Yeah, which is funny.
Yeah.
Because it has stuff going on where it's like, versus like, this show apparently, I watched it like a year ago and I just have zero idea what it was really about, other than him like teaming up with like a computer hacker guy that I don't know.
Huh.
I don't fucking
weird.
Remember. Basically, in short... No, there's nothing redeeming about the Punisher.
Doesn't sound like it. I could have guessed that from seeing him as a character, I guess, when they made his own show. But yeah, it sounds like that show just wasn't anything compelling at all. Like, it wasn't anything about... It wasn't even interesting, slightly interesting, about a terrible person. Yeah, but that's kind of the Punisher's thing, is like, he's terrible, watch it.
He's into shooting guns.
Yeah, which is just so boring.
Or like, oh my god, he did crazy stuff when he was in the military. Yeah. Oh my god.
God, like, weird.
Okay, cool, I guess. So we have a second email. After the GDC unionization talk kicked up a bit of a storm in the games industry, I got to thinking about the possible, if maybe unlikely, effects that this could have and how far it could be stretched. Specifically with regards to unions for players rather than developers, there's been pretty regular reports on how harsh the esports scene is for players with regards to toxicity, workload, and lack of healthy support for players. And some of these things could even be stretched to the streaming Let's Play side of things, even if that's a whole other beast. What are your thoughts on unions for professional video game players and what forms that should or shouldn't take?
This is kind of interesting because this morning I read the silk thread thing.
Oh god, that was horrifying.
It was this morning when I already sort of, I forget, like, what, I mean, he talked about, like, he's a Overwatch League player. What team was he on? Because I don't even remember.
He was on, first thing is he was on LA Valiant, right, and he got traded to Gladiators.
Yeah, he talked about, like, what, practicing Overwatch 14 hours a day?
14 hours a day.
And did he say he didn't like that? I don't remember.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, and I think he was saying also that, like, he had to speak Chinese?
Well, here's the thing, is he, after he was on Gladiators, he went to one of the Chinese teams that isn't even officially starting yet.
Yeah,
like, Chengdu Hunters? He was with Chengdu hunters, yeah. And Silk Thread does not speak Chinese.
Yeah.
Silk Thread speaks English and I think Korean.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah. Definitely English, because like a lot of his stream stuff is in English.
Yeah.
But it sounded like, you know, it was a lot of playing the game, getting burnout, and having a lot of like pressure from like scrims, like having to talk in like Chinese because that's how they had to practice. That sounded hard. It just sounded like a lot of work, and then also losing the passion for the thing. And just not wanting to be a player anymore. Because he even said, like, he's going to go back to school and he'd love to be, like, a behind-the-scenes person in esports, but a player doesn't sound like something he wants to do. And it sounds like...
I wouldn't want to.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. And I think that ties into what Gus was saying, because I think, or asking, because that seems to be a thing that we're seeing more now. I mean, I think that's been a thing in esports for a bit, right? With other games, too.
Yeah.
Like, there's been a lot of players, like, switching sides from player to like, you know, like somebody else behind the scenes, but you know, we see the fact that
veteran esports players are like, you're considered like close to retirement if you're like 25.
Yeah, and it's also like, well, but then you see these numbers come out of like 14 hours a day, and then all the Shanghai Dragons like stuff that they talked about, and they even made like a facility for training before the second season's even started, and it's just it's a lot of playing the game, and like it sounds like just a ton of stress and like the lack of structures in place for just like, you know, support for those players. You know, like you look at like the stuff with Effect from Dallas Fuel, you know, like I know this is all old, I guess, for like us talking about it, but yeah, I think that stuff should be taken a lot more seriously. And I don't know what for, I guess, I don't know. Like he says, like, what are your thoughts on, or they say, what are your thoughts on unions for professional players and what forms that should or shouldn't take?
I mean, I don't know if I feel that there's forms it shouldn't take, because I think unionization broadly is,
I was going to say,
a social good. Like
one.
No, I don't think there's a bad thing. Like, I mean, overall, the goal of unionization is basically to bring the power of labor. It's to bring the power of labor in face of, the people who own these teams and the people who run these teams.
There was somebody trying to start one, right?
I think so, or there's been talk of it.
Yeah.
There's been talk of people wanting one, because it's been a really big deal for unions for other traditional sports. And it's because it's like we forget that people who compete in sports are working. It's not just entertainment, it's work.
Yeah, it's work. Yeah.
And just because the end product is entertaining, and because they're naturally, you know, like they're gifted athletes or esports athletes or whatever, doesn't make it less work. And it's very clear that there are abuses everywhere. People just really don't think about the fact that, like, just because it's computer games doesn't mean that, like, there is not a mental and physical toll on your body.
I think it's telling that a lot of these teams from Overwatch League are like, we have a like nutritionist or whatever. We have somebody making food for them because they need to eat healthy. We have somebody making them work out or like exercise every day because they need to do that, because it's like, you can't just play a game and wait, like go to sleep, wake up, eat, and, you know, play a game. Like, they need to stay healthy as people.
But it's interesting that they do those things, that they recognize that those are needs. But then they also don't recognize that you cannot make people practice for 14 hours a day. That is,
I just think, I mean, isn't that always been a sports thing of like, you practice a bunch, you win? Like, the better practice, the more, like, isn't that just like an ingrained issue?
But that's the thing, is that there is many compelling studies that say practicing smarter versus practicing longer.
Right.
Is how you actually
practice.
Here's the thing: 14 hours of practice is not going to make you a better Overwatch player.
And the thing is, I think a lot of those teams, and I guess I don't know for sure, but I know that at least some of the teams have talked about how, like, they definitely scrim, and I think that definitely has a purpose of like, let's get better at this map or whatever, this composition. But they also are just instructed to just play competitive.
Play competitive, just regular,
like either solo queue or with some of the teammates. And it's like that, I mean, yes, that is practice, I guess, for just staying on top of like mechanically skills, like stuff. But like, that some of that stuff I feel like could just, like you said, could be cut, like, because you're going to be practicing with a purpose on like the scrims and stuff. Like, why are you making your players just play like competitive? Like, don't do that. Like, just do other things. Yeah. There's other things. Like, you, like, don't play that much.
People need time to rest. People need mental health care. These players need a union,
but I think,
because they need to have somebody who's advocating for their best selves. They need people advocating for their health,
right,
and their money and their time.
I think it, like, would also be big because I think a lot of the players don't see it as bad to practice 14 hours a day because they need to, you know what I mean?
They're like, young. Yeah. Because they're young and they're being offered a shit ton of money to do this, so they're going to think it's good.
Right.
But they also don't know any better.
Some of them, like, affected many of them, who are just like, I'm just going to just put my head down and just practice a bunch because we failed today or whatever. And it's like, I, you know.
You need somebody telling you that that's...
Yeah.
Here's the thing. The people, if people are going to do that, you need a union to come, like, this is one of the functions of unions, is because so many of the labor abuses that happen are because we live in a capitalist society where people are told that that's normal and they're told that that's the only way to get things done, and it's absolutely a fucking lie.
Yeah.
But when you're told that your entire life, you're gonna just believe it, which is why unions are so important, because they specifically draw a line in the sand and say, absolutely not. It is not going to happen that people are going to practice this much. It's not going to happen that this is a thing that you're going to do.
Yeah.
You cannot make players do this. And if you do, you're going to be in violation of contracts. You're going to be in violation of union rules, and you're going, and we can strike. We have recourse for this.
Yeah.
We have leverage. And that's the other function of unions, is not just to work out worker protections and healthy and sane ways of doing labor, but also leverage that group power of saying, if you're not going to treat us like individuals, if you're not going to treat us in a healthy manner, you will no longer have an Overwatch
League. I think it's important, especially when you see Overwatch League Season 2 being like, we're going to make the players play less because they don't even play necessarily every week now. And it's like, I mean, I guess that's good, obviously, but like, you know, that could have been there from the beginning. Like, we've had other esports existing, but like, Blizzard has done other esports games, like stuff like this. You know, esports is not new.
They're also doing it out of the kind, you know, like the kindness of their own hearts, right, quote unquote. But the thing is that they have to be forced to do it. And they have to
that's what I was saying. Held accountable, like, they need,
which
that
is should why
have just been
union...
a thing that would have had to have happened. It shouldn't have been like, we're changing things up this year. It's like, no, you. It
they didn't
have
to do that.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do that. The only reason that we're getting that is because they feel like doing it, whereas a union needs to step in and guarantee that that happens. Because a union is going to be able to hold their feet to the fire.
Yeah, I wonder if they were doing it. I mean, I don't know why Blizzard did it, but I, you know, there's a lot of stuff coming out of Season 1 that was like, this does not sound good if you're a player. Like, even if you're a team that's winning, it doesn't sound like it's going well for everybody.
Well, because they know that they're losing talent.
Yeah.
They're losing, like, a bunch of players quit.
Right.
Like, just because hours, mental health, like, and so that's definitely probably affecting their bottom line, too. So that's why they're doing it. Not because I believe that Blizzard has these players' best interests at heart.
Yeah.
Which is why a union needs to happen. So if we're going to talk about, you know, what are our thoughts on professional video game players, they need a union. People need unions. Now, for stuff like streaming and Let's Play, that's where it gets a little bit murkier, because you'd have to model that on something closer to something like there's a union specifically for freelance workers, writers or creatives, in specific, and that tends to have to function a little bit differently, but similar in that nobody's in one particular industry or in one particular arena.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of people who do freelance work, and you could Twitch streaming and Let's Plays. I'm going to leave Let's Plays out of this because that's kind of a whole.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
Other thing.
I mean, it's not a whole different, but it's, yeah.
It's a little bit more murky, I think. But so let's take Twitch streamers. Those are self-employed people, basically. For the purposes of like money and stuff, they're self-employed and they're freelance. And if streamers in general banded together to create a streaming union, I think that would be really good.
That would be interesting, too, because you see, I don't know the mechanics of it, but like, you know, a lot of the Overwatch League players stream, but they also stream with branding. And I don't know if... I know there's restrictions on, like, when they can stream and stuff, and how not how long, but, like, just when. But I wonder if there's stuff where it's, like, you need to stream because, like, you're promoting Valiant or whatever. I don't know. We don't know. But I just wonder, like, if stuff... like, a union like that would help with even that stuff of, like...
Yes.
Yeah, like, I am practicing every day. I don't have time to stream this much or whatever. I don't know.
It would basically be somebody that could advocate for you.
Yeah.
It would also... It's hard. One of the things about being freelance or self-employed is that you basically get run over at every opportunity.
But I wonder if it's actually... I mean, I guess it's self-employed, but I just wonder if there are some stuff there that we don't know about where it is, like, you know, the teams that are getting a cut.
Even talking about people that stream for teams. Like, I'm talking about all Twitch
streamers.
Yeah,
I know you're talking, but I was just thinking about, like, esports stuff. Like, I wonder if something even that way would help with those players. But yeah, streaming in general, yes. Yeah, that is tricky because it is, like, self-employed. And also, it's also tricky because, like, partnership has its own demands too, right? Like, so... I don't know. That would be weird. It'd be hard, I guess.
I don't think it would be impossible.
No, I don't think it would be impossible.
I guess I'm kind of confused as to what you're talking about. Like, you don't think... I'm confused. Like, what specifically about streamers that work with teams?
Oh, I was just saying that I don't know if there's some requirement that the team, like, Overwatch League players have to stream a certain amount or not. I don't know.
Oh, well, if they had a union,
that's what I was saying. I didn't know you were only talking about just all streamers. I was saying from the esports side of things, we don't know if some of the like the players with all that branding have some weird like requirement to stream a certain amount because they're promoting the team. You know, like we don't know about those deals.
Well, they might. But here's the thing: is if you're in a union, they could require. You can't have a contract that requires you to stream more than X amount.
Yeah,
of hours
and that's what
a day.
I'm saying. Like, you see a lot of these players maybe practicing for 14 hours a day, but then also streaming, and maybe they have to stream. I don't know. I mean, they might not. I don't know if they. I don't think they. A lot of them do, but you know, we don't know. And I think a union for at least that. Like, I know you're saying all streamers, but I was saying like even if there was a union for just like players, that might help still with the streaming side of things too.
I'm sorry, I'm still so confused. Like the if you were in Overwatch League, a union would protect you against all of the things you would have to do as a player, and that includes streaming, practicing, that sort of thing. I guess I'm getting confused about that. I'm talking about like if you're in Overwatch League and you have a players union, you probably could like a union could basically say that players do not have to stream.
Yeah, that's
like,
what I was saying.
Contractually, don't have to stream.
I don't know if they have to, but it would help. Like,
we don't know.
A lot of them do, yeah.
I'm talking about all Twitch streamers.
Yeah.
I think Twitch streamers should have a union as well.
Yeah. I don't know. That would be tricky with all streamers just because it's different. Like, there is no requirement for a lot of them, right? Like, I don't even think Ninja has a requirement, you know?
No, no one has a requirement necessarily, but what I'm saying is that how the freelancer union works is it uses that collective mass of people who are all self-employed, and it basically sets up a structure for those people to have a collective effort to go to, say, health insurance companies and get a health insurance plan for all of these freelancers, which is a big deal when you're a freelancer. Yeah. Because
especially with streamers we've seen too, you know, like we've seen a lot of streamers just sort of stop because of like, I don't know, the toll of like just streaming a lot, you know, like that's also a thing. And there's nobody ever saying anything about like, you should maybe not stream this much, like not stream 24 hours a day or whatever, you know what I mean? Like,
because it's their livelihood.
Yeah, and especially because they feel like they need to. Just, like, we've talked about this. There's no limits. Yeah, like, they're just like, I'm just going to stream 16 hours a day because I can, because nothing stops, like, stopping me. And also, the numbers go up and I do get paid eventually. You know, like, it's good to stream a long time.
Which is why we need collective organization for streamers, because then it becomes. Here's the thing is when you let people. When you have something like Twitch being the only, like, for the sake of argument, let's say Twitch is the only streaming site. It's the big one. Yeah. It's the big one. Twitch makes money on these people streaming 24 hours a day or 2 hours a day, no matter what.
Right.
If you have a streamers union, people are less in competition with each other. And the thing is Twitch likes competition between streamers because it's all money for them.
Yeah. But same thing with YouTube, streamers, too. I know. Well, we're not talking about streamers, YouTube, but...
Yeah, streamers individually are in competition with each other because if you're watching one stream, you're not watching somebody else's stream. If you're subscribing to one person's stream, that's money that's not going to somebody else. Using your Prime sub on one
person,
Yeah, exactly. So it becomes a competition, whereas I think collective organization for streamers would reduce... some of that competition.
Yeah, especially since and even also the site is structured that way where it's like top streamers at the top of the page, like, you know.
But it would reduce that competition, and it would also provide more security for streamers, give them that collective bargaining power to go to Twitch and say, we need to be paid more, we need to have partnership goals that are easier to hit, we need to be taken care of, we're going to bargain for health insurance, we're gonna bargain for minimum income, we're gonna bargain for,
especially since now it is just a job for people, like
it is a job. Yeah. And so it needs to be structured the same way that other freelancer unions are.
It might even structured. It out would it even it out too, like would it make it to where it's like there's a little bit less of a gigantic difference from people who stream tons of hours a day versus like maybe somebody who just streams 2 hours a day that is still popular but not necessarily.
I can't answer that question. Like, I really don't know because I don't really know enough about streaming to kind of make that determination. And I also don't know a ton of.
There are definitely people who just can't stream that much, but still have quality stuff and still get views. But, you know, they're Twitch typically just, you know, you usually benefit on Twitch if you just stream a long time because people will just eventually tune in or whatever, you know.
Honestly, the problem with streaming is that we don't have a minimum basic income.
Yeah.
You know how many things, you know, you wouldn't have to stream 24 hours a day to make enough money to make rent if you had minimum basic income. Right.
Yeah. You just wouldn't. It's off of ads. So naturally it's not going to be the greatest income because it's going to be based on just people seeing stuff.
Yeah. No, like so many more things that we have in our economy now, like Let's Players and YouTube creators. And I mean, like if we had minimum basic income, we wouldn't need Patreon. We wouldn't need GoFundMes. There would just be so many quality of life changes that would allow people
to forgot about like even the creative, Patreon. Yeah. That's interesting.
The
too.
Creative things that people want to do freelance or as a side hustle, because they have to also have a daytime job.
Yeah.
Would be so much easier to do if everybody got paid $30,000 a year, no questions asked.
Yeah.
So
I still that's and kind I, of my I final still feel like it would that. Potentially also just make it to where smaller people might rise up a little bit and a little bit more equal to other people, just because.
Well, they wouldn't have to like have huge audiences.
Yeah,
to
that's what I mean. I think be able to eat. That's just generally a good thing. I don't know. Like,
It's. People make good content whether they have two people watching it or 2,000
I think streaming, I think that's the big issue with streaming, is that there's good people out there that have four viewers and they just can't stream 16 hours a day, and they don't want to play Fortnite, you know? Like, so
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So in short, unionize, let's work towards minimum basic income.
Yeah.
And then let's also take care of food, rent, medicine, and schooling for everybody.
Yeah, unions let's are just... good all around. But for specifically with Gus, like, yes, esports players should have it, definitely. Especially with the Silk Thread this week, like the Silk Thread tweet. Because, like, it's just, it is very clear that there is issues there that need to be dealt with. Because they're going, these players are just going to stop playing.
These players are specifically being taken advantage of, and it's horrible. So... we've also run so far over our time.
We skipped a topic.
We skipped a whole topic, so I think this is probably where the end of the show needs to happen. So, okay. Tyler, where can we find you on the internet?
I'm at Tyler Culp on Twitter, TylerColp. I'm on YouTube, Tyler_Culp there. I stream for Blizzard Watch. Just twitch.tv/BlizzardWatch, like Blizzard Games, Overwatch, stuff like that. So write for Blizzard Watch. I have some articles on Fanbyte as well. And that's it. That's all my stuff.
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at AppleCiderWitch, on Twitch at AppleCiderWitch. I also stream at Blizzard Watch as well. And I also have a piece up on Fanbyte, which you do know, but Tyler's the one that writes a lot more for them. So
we linked it in last episode's notes too.
Show notes. Yeah. So, yeah, if you like the show, please follow it on Twitter at MISFcast.
Yeah, and you can always send stuff there, too, you know, just like as replies. Yeah. Like we might read those on the show, too, like instead of emailing if it's easier.
Yeah. If you like the show as well, please rate and review us on iTunes. It means a big deal. It helps us out a lot. Send all your questions and comments to our email, which is makeitsoundfiction@gmail.com. Also, just tell your friends, tell your family. If you like the show, tweet about it, put it on Facebook, you know, whatever's cool for you. Also, our intro and outro music was done by Maddie Myers. You can find everything that she does at MidiMyers at MIDIMYERS.net or Midi Myers on Twitter.
Yeah, so, and let us know if you think the rewatch thing of Evangelion would be cool or not, because I don't know if anybody cares.
Yeah.
But
yeah, just let us know.
Yeah.
So. Okay. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.